So give yourself a round. Oh, well, thank you. All right. Okay, so we are closing to the end of the book of John. So we're in the Gospel of John, and we're looking at the end of his trial, and then in chapter 19, we'll see his crucifixion. And it becomes increasingly difficult, perhaps even for me to, to deal with these things, because I guess maybe as you get older, you appreciate more and more what God has done for us, and you realize more and more who Jesus was. He wasn't just a man, he's our God, our creator. And to see what he did for us, it's, you know, it's stirring, you know, and see what they did to him is troubling at best. And so, but yet in all this section, we emphasized last week, I want you to see, and I'm going to maintain, Jesus was in charge of everything. Remember that theme that we were trying to follow? That Jesus said, I have authority to lay my life down, I have authority to take it back up. And where did he get that authority? The Father, because he's only here to do his will. So on one hand, it looks like the powers that be, politically and the religious leaders of the day, are taking his life. But no, we know he is submitting to them. He is really in charge of everything. And so from his betrayal to what happens now when he is being interrogated illegally and in his trial, if you want to call it that, his inquiry in front of Pilate, he's in charge of everything that's going on. So we'll try to point that out as well. And then the other thing I want you to notice as we go through this, the brevity in which John describes some of the events. Because if this was a mystery novel or some historical drama, and they were going to be talking about Jesus being scourged, you know, how would they have described that? Yeah, very graphically, maybe with, you know, description of the blood and people screeching and wailing and... But we're going to get to it, and I just want you to notice when we get there how simply John deals with it. And that speaks to what? What would you think? I'm sorry? Yeah, historical accuracy. This is a historical document. It's not made up, because you don't have to embellish it, because it's true, and everyone of its day understood what was going on and scourging. And so... But that's lost on us, so we'll have to talk about it a little bit. So we're going to finish chapter 18, where there's really three sections. First of his betrayal, we've dealt with that. And then his time before the high priest and the Pharisees. But now we're going to look at his time before Pilate, and that's where we were. Now, Pilate had this association with the Caesar. He supposedly had married a granddaughter. We mention again, he was not a very good man at all. Very, very weak. And we'll see this play out in the trial of Jesus. And as some people that are very insecure and weak, they try to portray themselves as strong or as a bully. So he was really mean and vicious and cruel to people. And that's how he masked or tried to show that he was a powerful person when really he wasn't at all. And so... that's where we were. They brought Jesus into the Praetorium, and that's this area where the Roman garrison would be held, and some said maybe he even lived there, and they aren't going to willingly enter into it themselves, but Pilate asked him, what is the charge? That's pretty much where we left off, okay? And they answered, and he said, well, you know, just the fact we brought him here is proof enough that he's guilty. Don't have to give a charge. I mean, we wouldn't be wasting your time or our time if this wasn't a bad man. So he says, well, take him and just deal with him according to your law. And so they come back and say, well, of course, we can't do that because we're not permitted to put anyone to death. And when they did this, said this, they fulfilled the word of Jesus, which he spoke, signifying what kind of death he would die. Now, this is what's really kind of interesting, and we've already talked about this, but I wanted to just share this with you. In John chapter 3, that was way back in John class, Jesus said this, as Moses was lifted up lifted up the serpent in the wilderness. Remember that occasion? When they're checking the plague, then if you looked up at the serpent up on the pole, you would be healed. He said, so the Son of Man must be lifted up. Lifted up on what? On a stake or on the cross. And so whoever believes in him will have eternal life. Now, what's interesting here is Jesus is already telling us, now they didn't understand at that time, how he's going to die. But did Jews practice crucifixion? No. And so if the Jews were going to kill Jesus, why would he be saying he's going to die on a cross? Well, he knew that they weren't allowed, and there's going to be a transfer of this prosecution from their hands into Roman hands, and they're going to have to ask Pilate or the Romans to actually kill him because they're not allowed to do so. Because if they were going to execute him, what would they have done, most likely? Just stone him. And so you got to get him on a cross. And well, Jesus says that, and here's how that's happening, okay? We're not permitted. And so Jesus comes in to Pilate, and he says, well, are you the king? Now, again, I just want to draw some other things that I didn't pull out last time. Jesus asked the question back. Now, when you ask a question to someone who's interrogating you, who does that show who is in charge? You know, it's not Pilate. Jesus is the one in charge. So his question is what? Are you saying this on your own initiative, or did others tell you about me? Now, the reason I want to draw this attention to you, what's the question? Are you the king of the Jews? There's two ways you could approach that. Politically, Pilate could be asking that himself. Are you the king of the Jews? And that would be reason for concern, because that means we have a rebellion brewing, right? We have someone that's going to challenge the authority and the throne of Caesar, and Pilate's got to squash that. Are you rising up in insurrection? But if the Jews made the charge, see, did you ask this on your own? Or did others tell you about it? If it's a Jewish charge, then they are maintaining that Jesus is the king of the Jews, the promised Messiah. Do you understand the difference? And so really those are two. Are you a political king conspiring against Caesar? That's one question. Or the other question, are you messianic king of Israel? Now, would Pilate care about B? No. So Jesus is really just clarifying, what are you really asking me? Because yeah, I'm a king, but are you concerned because you want to know who I am spiritually, or do you think I am a political opposition? Because the answer to A is what? Am I a king rising up in rebellion? No. Well, the answer to B is what? Absolutely, I am the Messiah. And he said that over and over. Now, when Pilate's done here, he says, I'm not a Jew, am I? Well, of course not. So he said, I don't have any vested religious interest into your matters. Your own nation and chief priests delivered you to me. So now we're going to see it's really B, right? And so here's the question. What have you done? No. And I have that for us right here. How are you? We passed it. Sorry. Right here. What have you done? How could you answer that if you're Jesus? Oh, let me tell you what I've done. I've only just was God, and I left God, my godly position in heaven, and came down to the earth and became one of you. And while I was here, what did I do? I healed the blind, or gave sight to the blind, healed the sick, caused the lame to walk again. I cast out demons. I fed the hungry. And I cured those who had leprosy. I calmed the storm. I walked on the water. I gave hope to those who were despairing. I taught the truth to those who were in darkness. I led people into the light. I taught many disciples. And now I'm going to become the servant of all by dying for all. What did I do? I showed you how to love one another. And I showed you what great love God has for you. I mean, how could he have expounded on this? What did I do? He could have spent the next 2 hours just talking about what he has done. He's accomplished the work which the Father's given to him, and he's glorified as God. In any of that, is there anything that you could even remotely put him to death for? No. I mean, when you ask Jesus, what did he do? I mean, it's just the most glorious life that anyone's ever lived as far as of honor and service and you know, helping and loving. And so it's quite a question that he's asking. He doesn't even realize what he's asking. And maybe that's, again, when we're asking people to decide who they're going to say Jesus is, this is part of that process of them coming up with an answer. What did Jesus do when he's on this earth? I mean, do you really understand the man, who he was, and what did he do? He did. And so, I don't know, I just thought that was interesting. Of course, Jesus comes back and said, my kingdom's not this world. We talked about that, and here's where we're going to finish or pick up really our lesson. Remember, in his prayer, he asked God to say for, to take care of the 12. They're not of the world. Even as I'm not of the world, now he says, my kingdom is not of this world. Now, to have a kingdom, you're going to have basically four things. What are they? All right, first of all, you're going to have a king. Then what?
Subjects.
Subjects, right? Law. Then you have to some type of rule of law in which you rule over them with. And then the fourth? Yeah, some type of land or territory that you rule over as far as that you occupy. Now, here, that's the classical definition, you know, of a way you describe a kingdom. But the word really kingdom is the dominion, right? That's what the word dumb means. It's rule, the rule of the king. And so in this case, who is the king? Well, we know it's Jesus, right? Who are his subjects? And specifically, those that believe in him and allow him to rule in their hearts by faith, right? We are going to submit to you willingly from the heart. Not because we're captured and now slaves. Not because we've been enlisted into your army. We bow the knee willingly out of our heart. And that's why he says, Mike, kingdom is not of this world, because it's not physical, it's truly spiritual. We're transforming people, not making them conform to a lifestyle. And then, so what's the law? What's the law? I'm sorry? You could call it the gospel, right? And what did Jesus say? A new commandment I give you. That's really, it's about you showing love to others as I've showed to you. That's why you don't kill. That's why you don't kill adultery or commit adultery. That's why you don't lie, because that's unloving. But that's not good enough not to just do the bad things. You got to do the positive things. Lay your life down for others. Serve others. So where's the territory? I already mentioned it. It's in the hearts and the minds of men, right? And that's why it can't be overtaken, because they can kill your body, but can they take your faith from you? No. I mean, there's no way that anyone can remove you from Christ's kingdom. You can choose to give it up and walk away, but they can torture you, they can punish you, but they cannot get you to deny Christ unless you choose to. So what is a martyr? It comes from the word which we get witness from, someone that witnesses for Christ. But we think of a martyr as someone that gives their life for a cause. Christian martyrs were what? People that were threatened by death, deny Christ or die. And they said what? No. Kill me. Because Jesus is my Lord, and I can no more deny him than I can deny myself. I can't. He rules in my heart. And he owns me, and I will live for him, and I will gladly die for him. And when they put him to death, what did it cause? What happened as a result of that when Christians were martyred? They were honored by the Christian community. People like, wow, we've never seen such faithfulness to a king before. And also caused the church to even grow more. Rather than squash the growth of the kingdom, it caused the kingdom to be enlarged. We'll see that over and over and over. So when Jesus says, my kingdom's not of this world, that's a huge statement. And he says, if it was, my servants would be fighting. But it's spiritual in nature. Now, all of us are part of his kingdom right now. Inasmuch as we allow Jesus to rule in our hearts. And my life is yours, right? That's why Peter says in 1 Peter 3, verse 15, sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts. You set him apart there. Let him rule your whole life. Everything you do. All your decisions, your thoughts, and everything. All right? Any questions about that? That's what he means right there. In the world, but not of the world. He said it's within you. It's spiritually. He rules on our hearts. And of course, Jesus himself sits in heaven. All right. Any questions about that or comments? So now we go on in verse 37 of John 18. Therefore, Pilate said, are you a king? He's catching on quickly. Well, maybe a little slowly. You are a king? And then Jesus comes back. Jesus said, you say correctly that I am a king. Does anyone, who has the King James here? What does verse 37 say? Can you read it? Linda? Oh, you have the new King James? Yeah, who has the old one? Go ahead.
Pilate therefore said unto him, art thou a king then? Jesus answered, thou sayest that I am a king.
All right, art thou a king? You know, the these and the thous. Art thou a king? In the Greek, sometimes when you put words in different orders, it draws emphasis to them. And we do it in English. You are a king? We do it with just where... the intonation and, you know, things like that. But when you look at Jesus at this time, does he look like a king? And so there is in this question, a question, but also some mockery. You're a king? And Jesus comes back and what does he say? Thou sayest correctly, I am a king. And notice the use of I. For this I was born. That's why I came to the world in the first place. And for this I've come into the world to testify to truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. So I am a king. I've been born and I've come into the world. And it's all about the truth. The truth of who we are, who we're serving, what's really important in life. And I'm here to give testimony to that. Yes.
Like the King James, ESV does not use the word correctly. Is that a manuscript issue?
Say that again.
The word correctly, where it says you say correctly.
Oh.
It doesn't sound like the King James has that.
Yeah, correctly I don't think is right in the original. And it's inferred, yeah, as you say, I am a king. Right. Then when it's all done and said and done, does Pilate want to deal with this? Or does he kind of just dismiss it? What is truth? You know, again, this is a philosophical, religious question to him. And so what's his question about, are you a king? Is it A, are you a political threat? Or are you just some religious messiah? He now knows what? You're not a political threat. You're just some religious leader that the Jews are having a problem with. I don't want anything to do with you. What is truth? And so there's where we're done. It's interesting, when Paul talks to Timothy, he encouraged him in the sight of God who gives life to all things. And before Christ Jesus, he says, I want you to, you know, be faithful. But he calls into the question what Christ did when he made the good confession before Pontius Pilate. What's a confession? What's the good confession? When someone asks you, who do you say Jesus is, either you're going to deny him or you're going to make the good confession. And the good confession is, I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. You are my King. And here he says, Jesus made that good confession. He's referring to this right here. Jesus confessing who he is. Yes, I am a king. That's the only option. Either he is who he said he was, or he was a liar and a deceiver. So accept him totally or reject him. Let me just say this. When you make the good confession that I believe that he is the king, what does that imply when you say that? Huh? You're making a commitment to him as king. That's not spoken of enough. When you make the good confession, you are bending the knee before him. You're saying, you're my king, and that makes me your servant. I will do whatever you ask. So many people today, yeah, I believe Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. They have not made the good confession. It's sort of like when you're sworn into an office. You solemnly swear to uphold the Constitution. You know how they do that? And then the person says what? With the right hand on the Bible. They don't do that anymore. I do. They are committing to a life of service and honor. And when you make the good confession, that's what you're saying. Jesus, you are my king. I will follow you from now on. Yeah.
It's too
well, that's true too.
Yeah.
And you're proud to be that, aren't you? You're proud to be a servant of Jesus Christ because you understand who he is. So there's a lot being said in here, and that's the end of chapter 18. And so here he goes, and we're going to find five times Pilate either pronounces him innocent or tries to get him released. And each one of those are listed here in Luke. There's those several times. And then there's here in chapter 18, also in chapter 19, verse 4 and 12 and 13. But again, he brings them back out and says, I find no guilt. So what should happen right then if he was a man of character at all? He should have released him. Was he a powerful man or a weak man? If five times he tries to release him and or else pronounces him innocent, if he was a man truly in charge, what would have happened? He would have been released. See, this was a weak man through and through. Yes.
But he wanted to do the Jews a favor too, so he was
a... That's right. There's a lot of things they're playing on, and especially... Well, let's keep reading. But he says, you've got a custom that I release someone for you at the Passover. Josephus writes about that every year at the Passover, they had this tradition that the Romans would release some political prisoner back to the Jews. And so he's thinking, hey, this is your king. Maybe you want me just to release him to you because Pilate doesn't want to have him put to death. And so, do you want me to release for you the king of the Jews? Now, maybe he's mocking them, because do you think he believes that Jesus is the king of the Jews? He really doesn't care, because this is not a political matter, it's just a religious matter. So he's trying to wash his hands of it. So what we're going to see now in John 19, he's going to be condemned. Then he's going to be crucified, and then he's going to be buried. And I actually skipped verse 40. What did they do in verse 40 of chapter 18? They cried out again, not this man, but Barabbas. Now, the word cried is this, it's not just a loud voice, it's just a mob yell. They're just, no, no, we want Barabbas. And we find in Matthew's account, the Pharisees incited them to choose Barabbas over Jesus. So they're behind all this. The crowd is just, well, what happens when you have a mob? It's easy to stir them and get them to go and do what you want without reason or thinking at all. So chapter 19, verse 1. Then therefore Pilate took Jesus and scourged him. And the soldiers wove a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him in a purple robe. And they began to come up to him and say, "Hail, King of the Jews," and to give him blows in the face. And Pilate came out again and said to him, "Behold, I'm bringing him out to you that you may know that I find no guilt in him." Jesus therefore came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And the Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." And when therefore the chief priests, the officers saw him, they cried out, saying, "Crucify, crucify." And Pilate said to him, "Take him yourself and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him." And the Jews answered and said, "We have a law, and by that law he ought to die, because he made himself out to be the Son of God." When Pilate therefore heard this statement, he was the more afraid. And he entered into the praetorium again and said to Jesus, "Who, where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. And Pilate therefore said to him, "You do not speak to me? Do you not know that I have authority to release you and have authority to crucify you?" And Jesus answered, "You would have no authority unless it had been given to you from above. For this reason, he who delivered me up to you has the greater sin." As a result of this, Pilate made efforts to release him. But the Jews cried out, saying, "If you release this man, you are no friend of Caesar. Everyone who makes him out to be a king opposes Caesar." All right. We're going to stop there and talk about it. And I just want you to see the gist of how he just flows through this so quickly. This first section where he's condemned to death. Notice it just says they took Jesus and they scourged him. There's no elaboration, just one word. They scourged him. Now, we know that's a wooden handle with leather thongs that'd be about this long. And at the end of the leather thongs, there'd like be like straps. There'd be either a bone or metal tied into the end. And they would lean you over with your arms tied and stretched out, lean you over, and your back is bare. And then they would just whip you. And they said, it's one of the most painful experiences because your back's literally ripped open, the flesh and the meat is showing. And then every whip after that is going to tear into your muscle. And people would pass out. They often would die. They would go crazy with the pain. But John just says what? They scourged him. Perhaps as, okay, let's just beat this man. And then maybe that'll appease this anger of this mob and I can release him. Because there's no intention really to kill him right now. He's just taking him in and he's going to beat him. Then the soldiers, they take a crown of thorns. I thought we had some, but these are thorn bushes. They have long thorns and they waved or made it into a circle, put it on his head and then beat it into his head. And so is that pretty tender, your head? Your scalp, it's one of the most tender parts of your head, you know, even though it's really hard. And when you get cut up there, what happens? It bleeds a lot, doesn't it? And as hard as it was to watch The Passion of Christ, you know, I imagine a lot of you have seen that, it was probably pretty realistic when it showed all the blood that was on the body of Jesus. This was not a pretty picture at all. And some of the artwork, I understand the intention over the years. This is probably the crucifixion of Christ. Well, Jesus has been one of the most painted or depicted, person in art throughout the years. And some of them make him look all nice. And no, it was a bloody, terrible, gruesome picture. Then they put on a purple robe. That's a robe of majesty. Why a purple robe? Because what did he say he was? So are they making fun of him here? "We're going to give you a crown, but it's going to be a crown of thorns. And you're going to be washed in blood, and we're going to put this purple robe on you." Of course, is that going to rip on your back when you pull it off or anything? you know, when you have open sores, you don't want anything pushed up against you. And they put it on his head, and they come up and say, "Hail, King of the Jews!" And they spit in his face and slapped him. Now, they're mocking him for being the King of the Jews. Earlier, Matthew says the Pharisees, they mocked him for claiming to be the Christ, because they blindfold him and slap him and hit him and say, "Prophesy and tell us if you're the Christ, who just hit you?" So they're making fun of him for being the Messiah or claiming that. And here the Romans are making fun of him for claiming to be a king. On both sides, he got it. Now, it's just three verses, but in that, what did Jesus do? Nothing. He just took it. And you might think at this time he's not in control. But we're mindful of the book of Isaiah that speaks in chapter 53. He did this willingly, and he bore our bruises, and he bore our iniquities, and he took all this for us. He knew what he was doing. And any moment he could have removed himself from it, but he submitted all this to the will of God. When we look at it, he says, "Behold, I'm bringing you out." And here's one of those pictures. Look how nice he looks there, right? But when he brings him out, he still got the purple robe. He might have had a reed in his hand, because they gave him, the other account says, they gave him a reed for a mock staff, you know, like a scepter for the king. So had the thorn, blood all around him, his back's laid open, a purple robe, and this reed in his hand, and said, he brings him out and says, "Behold, the man." And you got to see the drama in this, and when he's bringing him out to him. So this might be a better, but this is probably most accurate. And it's hard to see. "Behold, your king." It's like a coronation. You know, he's bringing him forward to the people. And again, maybe just again, trying to appease their anger, this mob scene, so they, if they had any compassion, any pity within them at all, any decency as a person, they would look at that right there and say, "Enough's enough. That's good. We'll let him go." But this doesn't appease them at all, does it? Because the Pharisees have such hatred for who Jesus is, they're going to yell, "Crucify him, crucify him," even after seeing this. "Behold the man." You know, and again, when you're asked dealing with someone, who are you going to say Jesus is? The first question we brought to our attention is, what did you do? Isn't that what Pilate asked? What did you do? And people have to deal with all the good things that Christ did. And then they have to look at this. You have to look at Jesus. Here's what he did. Why did he do that? Why did he submit to this such cruelty? And it's an historical fact. We know it. And there's only one answer. Why? He loves us. He loves us so much that he's willing to endure this for you and me. Because as king, he wants you to be part of his family. And people have to deal with the man. What happened? Not just what's said about Jesus. They have to deal with the real events. Behold the man. And then we go on. It says, the chief priests, the officers saw him, and they cried out, "Crucify him." And Pilate says, again, "I find no guilt. So go crucify him yourself." And he knows they can't do that. And they say, "We have a law that he ought to die because he made himself out to be the Son of God." Now, this is interesting because it reveals two things. First of all, the text says, but Pilate, when he hears this, he comes really afraid. Whoa, whoa, whoa. This man said he was the Son of God. We said, why would that scare him? Well, because he understands the implications. Being a Greek or a Roman, they believed in multiple gods. They believed in this idea that gods could become flesh. But second of all, Did the Jews understand the claim of Jesus when he said he was the Son of God? Exactly. And Clark writes this, it is certain the Jews understood in a very peculiar sense when Christ called himself Son of God, they understood it to imply positive equality to the Supreme Being. So we've got a law, he ought to die because he said he was equal to God. Did they understand his claim? And that's why they put him to death for it. Did they believe the claim? No. But they're doing what they think they have to do because this is blasphemy. So they understood it. Now, when Pilate hears that, now he's scared. Like, whoa, I'm not dealing with just a man here. I'm possibly dealing with a God. Like, where would you come up with that? Well, this is why he's scared. Because he comes more afraid. Now, the word more afraid doesn't necessarily imply that he was afraid before. It just means he becomes very much afraid. But during this time, you know what his wife does? She has a dream. And in this dream, she realizes this is not just any old man. And she sends a message to him while he's in here. He says, I had a dream. This isn't a man. You better release him. And that's going to make him more afraid, right? And so all these things are going on, and he comes in, he asks Jesus again, where are you from? Now, that's a different question. The first question was what? What have you done? It's followed by, are you a king? Now what?